again, everybody. It is time for the Mainland Podcast. We are back once again. It is episode 154, I believe. I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com. We cover Orlando City, the Orlando Pride, Orlando City B, and even the Orlando Seawolves, but primarily Orlando City. And joining me, as always, to talk about the Lions and some of the other teams, David Rowe up in Tallahassee. Dave, how are you?
I'm better now. After Saturday, I'm distraught that I went into the backwoods of Georgia and did some backpacking to get away from everything for a day or two. But I'm back and feeling refreshed thanks to some beautiful nature and fresh air. So I'm ready to go.
I would like to have gone into the woods and gotten away from social media on Saturday, Sunday, Monday. It was pretty ugly. It was pretty nasty. I get it. You know, Orlando City comes home, plays Montreal Impact, falls 3-1 at home. It was the worst of the three performances so far. I know people were expecting better, but Orlando City did not pull out the victory or get a third draw in a row to start the season. The Montreal Impact, in my opinion, Dave, one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference. They finished very strong in 2018. They have added some very good players in the offseason, and they were missing a player last year who has returned to the lineup. And I think that this Montreal team, if it stays healthy, can finish as high as third or possibly even second in the Eastern Conference if they can stay healthy. I think very highly of this team. I may be proven wrong in the end, but I think if Ignacio Piatti, one of the best players in the league, stays healthy and all their other key pieces stay healthy, I think that they're a very, very solid soccer team. They're playing better and better, and they have not – I don't even think they've played a home game yet this year. So if they can – hang around this early part of the season and then get some home games later, I think they could be a tough team. But Orlando City largely shot itself in the foot repeatedly on Saturday with really poor passing. It was an unexpected passing display. A little bit of a lineup change, Dave. Carlos Asquez gets his first start, which, of course, now in hindsight, everybody was like, well, why did they tinker with the lineup? Because he wanted to get his better players on the field, supposedly. Carlos is a presumed starter, so he is a guy who should be in the lineup, and at some point you got to put him in. You know that he's probably going to be a little bit rusty to start, which he was. He had a few turnovers and some bad moments, but I thought he got better as the game wore on. I thought he got a bit better at that, and it just was it was a rocky start, and it took him a while to settle in. And as for the other changes in the lineup, of course, Tesho Ekindele was hurt, so you put Dom Dwyer in to start the game. That's not a bad replacement, I think.
No.
you've got four at the back. I think Juan, he proved that he was a little better option than Kyle Smith, so I think you got an upgrade there. These are not guys that were off the pitch. They played quite a bit before. You had Chris Mueller back in the starting lineup, and he's played quite a bit this season. So overall, I think that the lineup tinkering and the change from a 3-5-2 to a 4-3-3, a little bit overblown by people. It was just bad individual performances. I don't think the shape had anything to do with the individual performances. This is not a team. These are not defenders who don't know how to play four across the back. I think the team, pretty much came out and just didn't play well as individuals. They passed poorly. They made bad decisions. Part of that was Montreal's press. One of the things about Maxi Arruti is he's a guy that's been in Dallas. You didn't hear a lot about him because he doesn't score tons of goals, but one thing he does really well is he pressures the ball. He puts a lot of pressure on defenders, and the team worked on that. James O'Connor said after the game they told their defenders, Maxi Arruti's going to be on you, so you have to be decisive, you have to be accurate, you have to play with some bravery and some confidence. And I don't think they played with bravery and confidence, Dave. I think that they played a little nervy, and it played right into Montreal's hands.
Without a doubt. As you were saying, Montreal definitely looks like a very, very good team in the East, and they showed it, unfortunately, against us on Saturday. What, 19 shots taken, 11 on target. So it's, obviously their pressing type of play is actually something, Connor would like to see from us a little bit more. But the whether or not they got warned, the defenders either didn't take it to heart or weren't able to put it into practice. And as you said, whether there was three on the back line or four, I don't think that was going to make a difference as far as, how, they do know how to play at, both of those shapes. So it wasn't that. It was, little mistakes that will kill you time and time again. And that's what killed Orlando City on Saturday.
It was some early issues. Asquez's first touch of the game was a bad one, and gave up a scoring chance. They gave up a scoring chance 90 seconds or so into the game, off the kickoff, and that was a bad sign. But I thought Orlando kind of settled in a little bit. They got some scoring chances. There was a chance for Dwyer, and he took a nice pass from Nani. It was a really good job by Nani to read the play, because Dwyer was in the six, but he was kind of covered, and Nani read his movement. He came back out of the six and up top, and Nani gave him a perfect pass, and Dwyer just fizzed one over the bar, and that could have been an early goal for Orlando. There was another opportunity where they could have had a free kick just above the box. Will Johnson, with a great steal, takes it up into the top of the area, gets knocked down from behind by Samuel Pietti. There's no call, and to make matters worse, on the way down, Johnson hits Victor Cabrera with his head, and he comes off the pitch. He came back on the pitch, but didn't last much longer and had to go to the locker room with concussion protocol. And that hurt Orlando in the midfield because, granted, it was only 15 minutes, but Will Johnson was running everywhere and intercepting and just being a pest. And the Impact were having some trouble dealing with him. And I don't think that there's a like-for-like switch on the bench. They end up bringing Christian Aguita in, but that's not Aguita's game. Aguita likes to anticipate passes, step into passing lanes, go shoulder to shoulder with guys and knock them down. But he doesn't do all the running. He doesn't do all the pressuring. He doesn't get up in your face and force bad passes the way that Will Johnson had been doing through the first two games and 15 minutes. And it really looked like a different team in the midfield after that. And I don't think that Aguita played poorly, but I think there's a reason he's on the bench. And I think the reason is he doesn't play the style the same way that Will Johnson does, which is why he's not in the starting lineup, because certainly James would like to go with the younger, more athletic player if he can, but if he's not getting the same effect on the field, he's not going to play him, and that's why he was on the bench. So Johnson goes out. That's a problem. The first goal was kind of unlucky, Dave. The ball gets kicked out wide. Danny Acosta does a nice job of recovering, and he deflects a cross attempt. Unfortunately, he goes right to Orji Okwankwo, who nobody bothered to come out and close down. Again, Carlos Asquez and O'Neill both had the coverage inside on a defender or on an attacker, and one of them needed to come out. Asquez was a little late coming out, but also Sebas Mendez didn't collapse and take him either. So he had an open look, and he put it inside the back post. Again, not a goal that Brian Rowe could do anything about. Knocked in off the far post, and it's 1-0. So you're like, okay, well, you're down a goal, but still tons of time to play. And then off the ensuing kickoff, Asquez goes and passes it to Shane O'Neill. Shane O'Neill did point for him to pass back to the keeper, but by the time Asquez was already in the motion of making his pass, so there's no way he could have held up and passed it back, so he continued the pass to O'Neill. O'Neill was under pressure, but not a ton of pressure. So he went and tried a little touch pass back to Rowe, and it didn't go anywhere, and that just was a disaster, because that enabled Maxi Arruti to get to the ball before Brian Rowe, and it probably would have been a red card had Maxi Arruti didn't touch the ball away from the net. He kind of touched it toward the outside rather than toward the inside, and Rowe took him down outside the box, ended up getting a yellow card, but the ball went where it you don't want it to go, which is to Piatti with an open net. And he doesn't miss even when there's a goalie there most of the time. So when there's nobody there, it was pretty easy goal. And quite a celebration for a guy who just tapped it into an empty net.
Yeah, you know, your predictions last week for this was the defensive mid in the back line against Piatti, and that right there was exactly what you hoped would not happen. You know, you got to give it up to Brian for doing everything that he could. I mean, you know, even like you said, could have been a red, but in that situation, there's only so much you can do. And once that ball gets out to Piatti, well, then there's nothing anybody can do. So, the biggest thing about that whole play, just how frustrating it is watching it, you know, knowing that all the backline problems we had last season and what James O'Connor's on to try and address them with quite a bit of turnover, and knowing that, you know, we've said several times before the season that there was going to be a lot of rotation back there, hopefully. But like you said, Carlos just got back. Everybody hasn't worked together yet, and this is the point where I'll say it's going to take some time. These guys got to get some playing time together, and unfortunately, that type of horrible mistake happened. Hopefully we'll see less of it, and hopefully, you know, O'Connor will lay some practice just down upon them. But yeah, that's one of those things where you're just shaking your head after everything happens.
Yeah, Asquith and O'Neill have played together before, so it's not like unfamiliar.
Yeah, I know. I'm just they the, haven't. They, the thing you know, is his first time back.
Sure. The thing is though, O'Neill just didn't put enough on his back pass, and you see that. It doesn't matter what team you follow in soccer. Every team does it once a year at least.
True.
Hopefully that, you know,
make it less frustrating.
Hopefully it's the only one that happens. I mean, some teams do it two or three times a year. I remember as a Manchester United fan, I've seen players take turns with these types of back passes. Michael Carrick one week, and then Johnny Evans the next, and that kind of thing. And it was like, can we just pass forward? Can we just make a rule you have to pass forward?
Right.
But yeah, it didn't work out, and it's too bad. But then it was 2-0 down, and the only good thing about that was there was a ton of time to go. It was the 16th minute, and you just thought Montreal's a much different team than New York City. They're pretty good when they have a lead, and they had a 2-goal lead. It was going to be tough to come back against them. But Orlando City did get opportunities to score. On another night, Dom Dwyer might have scored 4 times. He missed some very, very easy for him opportunities. He had opportunities he had a ball slid across from Nani that he got a foot on, but he didn't get enough of it. It went wide. He had another one that he shot wide when it was a great job by I think it was Chris Mueller to knock a ball into his path, and he had every opportunity to shoot it. I know people are giving him grief for not passing it back, but you expect your star striker to make that shot. He did. All he had to do was get it on target and miss the keeper. He missed the keeper, but also missed the target pretty badly. You don't want him to be afraid to take that shot. And then if he passes the ball and doesn't make the perfect pass, you know, then you're blaming him for not taking the shot. Or if Chris Mueller misses the net,
right,
then you're blaming Dom for not taking the shot. So
right,
he's kind of damned if he did and damned if he didn't. The only thing he did wrong was he missed, essentially.
Correct.
I mean, it wasn't the decision. The decision was like, well, he was being selfish. You know, good
strikers.
You know,
I really
good,
hate it when
good strikers are a little selfish.
I hate it when he doesn't want to score.
Yeah. So, also, this thing I completely spaced on at the game. I knew before the game that Greg Berhalter was there because the U.S. men's national team is in town training for Thursday night's game against Ecuador at Orlando City Stadium. And I wondered if, you know, because there were all these forwards got called up, they were all from MLS, and Dwyer didn't get the call, if he was maybe a little nervous playing in front of Greg Berhalter. We didn't get a chance to ask him. We didn't talk to Dom after the game. But I wondered if he might have been pressing a little bit.
That's an interesting thought. Could be, not that it would have made a difference for obviously this particular camp, but he might have been thinking, like you said, with the, and we'll probably get to talk about the forwards that are there, but hey, here's my opportunity to show Berhalter, what I can do, and then all of that happens.
Yeah. So unfortunately, they weren't able to get back in the game. Some late substitutions brings Santiago Patino on for his MLS debut, and also Josue Coleman comes on, and surprisingly, he's pulling defenders off. And so Acosta and O'Neill came off, and now you're basically playing one at the back. Asquez with Juan playing right center back and Mendes playing left center back, but they're pushing up the field trying to press and put numbers forward. So you're really playing a one-man back line at this point, and it's no surprise Montreal's able to create a turnover and score again. Sasha Kljestan didn't have a great game. He didn't play as poorly as some people would have you believe, but if certainly wasn't his best game of the season. I think that he works much better in the midfield with Johnson than he does with Aguita. But, I mean, Mendes had no business giving him the ball where he did. And so all he could do is try to get rid of it quickly. He turned and tried to get rid of it. It was deflected by Harry Novillo. And, of course, it was deflected the one place you don't want it deflected, to Ignacio Piatti once again. And now Mendes, who is out of position because he was pushed up forward and making that pass, and Rouen, who was up the field, you've basically got Piatti on, or Piatti and Novillo on Asquez, and Asquez did a good job of taking away the pass. So that left Piatti to go 1v1 with the keeper. Now, Kljestan did try to recover and defend it, but you're asking Sasha Kljestan to defend 1v1 against Ignacio Piatti. That's not going to go well.
No, it's not. It doesn't go well for anybody but Fiati.
He's an attacking midfielder, Sasha. He's not a defensive midfielder. So, no, he wasn't able to close him down enough, and it made it 3-0, and that was pretty much a game set match at that point. Then Santiago Patino with a nice play to get Dom Dwyer a tap in. First MLS assist for Patino, the Orlando area. Not really a native, but he grew up here. And that was a kind of a little bit of a feel good ending to the game because he was able to get that assist.
A true silver lining, as in all dark clouds except for the outside of it. The start of the game, you feel good. The end of the game, okay, you have that nice little assist for him. And with the rest of it all not being very good, but there we are.
I mean, they kept fighting. I mean, it was not like that they laid down and gave up. They did try to fight right to the end, and it just was too big of a hole to climb out of against a good team. And when you miss those opportunities, it not only keeps you from getting goals that you need to get back in the game, but it also saps your morale a bit when you're missing those opportunities. And certainly, Dom's not the only one that missed some. He missed several chances, but there were some chances where Rouen got in the box, and he sent, I don't know if it was a cross or a pass. Either way, it was not a good one. It went wide of the far post, and then you had another opportunity where he got loose in the box, and he throws it through the six, and nobody's making a back post run, and so therefore there's nobody there to tap it into an empty net. At the end, there was another opportunity for Orlando, and this came in a little bit of a controversy, but there was an injury to Novillo on a 50-50 aerial ball that Tim Ford blew the whistle. It had been a chippy game up to that point. There really wasn't that much contact. Novillo stayed down. He was holding his head because that's what you do. And
Sure.
He stops the game, and Orlando players are visibly upset. They wanted to play on and keep getting on with it. They didn't want the time wasting. They were assuming, not a real injury. He's milking this. It's time wasting tactics and that kind of thing. And probably they're right, but the only one who knows for sure is Novillo. But
Right.
So there's a drop ball situation. It wasn't a free kick, but Chris Nogueta plays the ball forward to Patino, and Patino just takes the ball and he just heads. You know, he's a young guy, energetic. He's enthusiastic. He wants to make his mark. He heads for the goal. Sends across to Dom, but he can't quite get his pass right, and it goes a little too far in front of Dom. So it wasn't. It was nearly a carbon copy of the earlier goal with the tap in for Dom, but it was a little too far out in front. Then Dom recovered it, crossed it over the 6-yard box. Patino heads it toward goal and he actually hits Chris Mueller with the ball. And it probably, if Mueller's not there, it probably goes in and it's 3-2.
Right.
And then, you know, the ball gets knocked out for a throw in, and then it kind of became a little bit of anarchy, a lot of pushing and shoving. Of course, Montreal didn't like the fact that Orlando played the drop ball rather than gave the ball up like you're supposed to do in a sporting manner when the ref stops play and says, here, I'm going to drop the ball, you give it to the other team. And it would be interesting to know what Tim Ford actually said on that play, because it looked like there was some confusion. James O'Connor apologized for that to Montreal after the game. He said, that's not who we are. That's not acceptable. And, you know, clearly the players on the field were not happy with the Novillo, their perceived or their perception of him
milking
an injury and that kind of thing. So, but that doesn't excuse it. If he was told to give it, you know, to knock it down the field, you know, then he should have knocked it down the field. Or, you know, maybe it's just a matter of that's where he put it, and Patino just happened to be there and went, oh, look, I got the ball in the open field, and it took off. I don't know. We actually didn't ask Santiago after the game, because in the flow of the game, literally the entire press box was not really sure what had just happened. But it was interesting, and it would have been it would have really riled up Montreal had Patino's header gone in the net. But it did not. The game ended shortly thereafter, 3-1 win for Montreal and Orlando City. Dave, I hate to break this to you, not going undefeated in 2019.
Oh, man. You know, I had hope up until Saturday. Not really.
Well, it's gone. And guess what?
That means that we don't have to worry about that.
Now, it means New York Red Bulls are next and DC United are next, so it's probably going to be 2 more losses before we see any chance.
I like to win. My answer better.
Yeah, well, you would. It's a subjective thing. So we still have to do this man of the match thing, Dave. So who's your man of the match for the 3-1 loss to Montreal?
For me, it's got to be Brian Rowe. I mean, he had a ton of saves. I know that there are people out there who think that anybody who gives up 3 goals shouldn't get man of the match. But if you stop as many as he did and only give up 3, especially when some of them there's not a darn thing you can do about it, and that's just the shot stopped. That's not even including the other things he did. You know, as far as breaking up, you know, potential shots. Unfortunately, it was a no-brainer on that one. I wish that there had been somebody else that had been a little bit more competitive for the man of the match, but for me, it's Brian Rowe.
Yeah, I agree, and it's the caveat is obviously he wins it by default,
right?
Because no one else really deserved it, and he kept the game from being, you know, 5 or 6 goals for the visitors. I mean, he really made some big stops. He made some big plays that weren't even saves, where he came off the line to get the ball first. One time where Piatti would have been in one-on-one, and he read the ball really well in the air. I thought he played really well, with the exception of his distribution was awful again, especially in the first half. I think it was a little better in the second half. I think he finished with around a 47% passing accuracy, which is not acceptable. But and obviously the 3 goals, you're not going to stop any of those. I mean, he wasn't even in a position where he could do anything about the second one. He saw what was happening and he tried to make a play. And if he was a little faster, if he were half a step faster, he gets that ball right before Rudy does, and maybe diffuses the situation. But you know, at that point, you just want a guy to make a decision: are you coming or are you not coming? And if you come, you better just keep coming. because
right.
you know a lot of things can happen. But if you change your mind midway, you're done. You're definitely giving up a goal. You just have to cross your fingers and hope the guy misses the target. But you know, I can't fault him for any of the three goals in terms of being able to stop them. And it could have been a whole lot worse. And we've given that to Bendik before in the past. You and I have given Joe Bendik a man of the match when the team has gotten shelled, and he's kept mm-hmm. them from losing by five or six goals. So I think it's only fair that we do it here.
Especially since nobody else stepped up and anything better.
Yeah, nobody earned it. You know, you could talk about the fact that, you know, Dwyer put himself in position to make those goals, but he didn't.
And if he had, then we'd be talking about him as man of the match.
You know, he got six shots off, and two of them were on target. But, you know, one of those was a header right at the goalkeeper, which, again, that was another one of those chances that could have been a goal and on another day would have been. You know, it's a game where Dwyer could have easily scored a hat trick and possibly more with the opportunities he was given. Nani gave him two beautiful passes in this game. But he wasn't able to finish either one. Anyway, that's it. You know, there's a trip to Montreal, maybe get revenge, but other than that, it's on to the next one.
Do we have to?
Yeah, we got to. In fact,
okay.
We gotta go do it against the Red Bulls. And, you know, fun fact, there won't be a Will Johnson because of concussion protocol. There won't be a Sebas Mendez because he's on international duty and he will probably be playing on Thursday against the U.S. And I'm not sure if Ecuador probably has a second friendly lined up after that, but so he's probably not going to play. You've got also Kamal Miller was called up to Canadian national team as a replacement, ironically, for Will Johnson. So Kamal Miller won't be available. So there's some guys that are out. And
none of those are fun.
Yeah, it's and you're going on the road to play, you know, the Supporter Shield winners, and
right.
they're kind of good. So
yeah,
it's not great, Bob.
it's not great, Bob. Definitely not.
We'll talk a little bit more about the Red Bulls later in the game. The Red Bulls, by the way, are 2-1 on the season. And then, of course, then you got DC United the week after, which is a team that's 2-0-1 and tied atop the Eastern Conference and has looked like one of the best teams in the league since getting Wayne Rooney last year. So, anyway, let's talk a little bit about the Orlando Pride, Dave. Pride with they announced a new roster or some roster updates this week. Really, nothing earth-shattering. They basically wanted to say, look, our international players have come back. And so that's basically what it was about. Ashlyn Harris, Alana Kennedy, Shalina Zdorsky, Emily Van Egmond, Alex Morgan, Chia Bogugu, and Marta all back. We've heard Camilla is back in town. Not sure she's trained yet, but she's back in town after some last-minute green card paperwork back in Brazil, so the whole team should be here. Defender Kim Reynolds has left camp. She was a non-roster invitee, but joining the camp has been two new non-roster invitees, midfielder Leah Mohammadi, I'm not sure which way that's pronounced, and forward Caitlin Farrell, and they are from Harvard and Georgetown, respectively, and both pretty decent college players that just didn't happen to get drafted, and Farrell not getting drafted was a little bit surprising. One of those players that probably could have been drafted, but we'll see. And she fills certainly a position of need on the Pride. The Pride definitely in need of strikers because they are going to lose Morgan for the World Cup and probably a good chunk before that. And, of course, Chia Bogugu, if she's been playing up on the forward line and if Marta's been playing on the forward line, then they're both going to be gone as well. At least Marta for sure. Chi most likely. All it would take would be one attacker injury for England, and she is probably right there in the rotation. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if this team, this Pride team, which, by the way, the Pride go on the road this weekend, Saturday, they play at North Carolina for their first preseason game. So a good first test for Mark Skinner's group. Went to Pride Media Day last week, and it was interesting getting to talk to them. Of course, it was weird because they, other than Allie Krieger, everybody that they brought in was somebody that had only been in town for like 2 days. It was like, it was all the internationals. And yes, you want to talk to the star players, but it would have been really great if the Pride had given us somebody like Danny Weatherholt, you know, somebody that you know that has been there in camp and has spent some time with Mark and that kind of thing. So, you know, one of the players that has been around, maybe a Tony Presley or somebody.
But I could actually tell you something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So Skinner and GM Eric Ustruck were at the presser to kick off media day there, and it was interesting. They kind of made it sound like they've identified players that they want to maybe add, or positions at least that they want to bulk up. But they're giving people a chance to win those jobs at camp, and it looks like with an international slot that was earned on the Christine Nairn trade, and now maybe Camilla freeing up another international slot, it looks like maybe a couple of Mark's old players over at Birmingham City maybe coming over here, or maybe somebody from Wolfsburg from that new partnership. But it there should be some additions, and hopefully not players that are going to be gone during the World Cup.
Right. Well, and we talked about this before. I mean, having trialists, you know, come in to do that, having others trying to earn those positions, that was completely what we expected with this World Cup year. So you know, none of this is surprising. We already know a ton of people are going to be out on the internet for a good part of the year, so you're going to see these other players. How well Mark Skinner is able to identify the people he wants to work in his system, that will go a long way towards how the Pride do this season. It's one of those things where, of course, you know, we're big fans of the U.S. Women's National Team, and you hate to see you know, Harris and go, and of course, we hate even more when the women who play on teams that are not the U.S. Women's National Team go, because we'd really rather they stayed with the Pride. But it's the quality of this season, and you know, I guess take the opportunity to see some of these other players who, you know, you might not have been able to see, and who knows, you know, out of that we get some who really impresses and is able to, you know, stay on even after, you know, for next season after everybody gets back.
Absolutely. So the Pride got a first preseason game coming up. I did ask at the press conference if there was – I asked Eric Ustruck. He said in the next few days they should have the full preseason schedule out. They didn't announce any other fixtures. Mark Skinner said that they were going to be fixtures that test the players, so, or that challenge the players. And, you know, so it doesn't seem like they want to just do the same old play a college team four times and then get into the season like they did in the past. But
I don't know. You know, FSU challenged some pretty good last season.
Well,
I know there was. I was there. There were a ton of trialists. I'm joking.
Yeah. So I mean, it's not. And Alex Morgan even said, you know, you don't really get a lot out of those preseason games. You get a little bit of time to work with the teammates in preseason and kind of build some chemistry, but you know, you're not moving at NWSL game speed. You have more time on the ball and than you would, right, and that kind of thing. So anyway, it will be interesting to see what that schedule sort of looks like, because there's not a lot of money spent on preseason in the NWSL, and it would be nice. Like, I brought up the possibility of doing a tournament like Orlando City did this year with the Orlando City Invitational. Eric Ustruck said that, you know, that by the time they get in their preseason, the MLS team's already playing, so availability of the stadium is a little difficult to come by. But he said maybe if if they could work it out with the schedule, they could do it. Or maybe if they could find an alternate venue, they could do it. You know, say like a Disney Wide World of Sports or UCF or something. It might be doable. But I mean, the obvious is just do it during the weekdays because it's preseason anyway. And
sure,
you know, and then you're going to steer clear of the men's team because they're going to be playing on the weekends. So, but at any rate, excited to get the NWSL season going and to see where this team goes. Seawolves had another split of their two games this past weekend, so the MASL team is still chasing a playoff spot. They're still behind a couple of teams in the South Central Division. Not doing too poorly for an expansion team, but you know, they took care of the Tropics on Friday night. So they lead the Florida Derby series this year 3-2, and they led that thing pretty much start to finish. And then Kansas City came in on Saturday, and Kansas City jumped on them early and often, and then the Seawolves tried to fight their way back into it. Not very easy thing to do when you're playing two games back-to-back nights, and you're already stretched a little bit. The Seawolves are playing a lot of guys that are banged up. They're playing a lot of guys who are... you know, because it's a lot like hockey in terms of getting, you know, players getting on the field, you're trying to play your best players because you need a result. So they're wearing down their best players by playing them more minutes. They're trying to do what they can to save them as much as they can. But I mean, at this time of year, it's just a lot of wear and tear on these guys. And there's not the depth that some of the teams that have been around have. And they just added some new guys recently, four new guys. But, they haven't had time to gel yet too much either. So it's one of those things where if they can survive this inaugural season and get into next season, they may be able to build a little bit of a deeper team, and you might see a little bit better results next year. But they've been in just about every game this year, Dave. They've been, you know, even games that they seem like they're out of, when they're down 5 or 6 goals, they somehow find a way to battle back and to get back in these games. And you know, they don't always pull them off, but sometimes, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, a bounce here or there could have been the difference in getting them over the hump. So,
I mean,
it's still fun to
in
watch.
My estimation, yeah, I was going to say, in my estimation, I think they're pretty good for an expansion team. Like you said, they've been in games. It is a blast to watch. So, well, sorry, probably shouldn't use that since Baltimore is that. it is a lot of fun to watch. You know, and if you haven't been doing so, I mean, obviously for those of you in Orlando, it's a cheap night out. You know, go support the team. For those like me out of, you can find online and watch in the comfort of your home. So, anytime you've got a, you know, inaugural season like that on an expansion team, you're going to get what you're going to get. Enjoy the ride.
They're very much in this thing right now. The top two teams from each division make the playoffs. The Milwaukee Wave have run away with the division. They're 17-3, and they are atop the division. And they have already clinched the spot. Now, the second-place team is Kansas City. Would have been really huge if Orlando could have beaten them on Saturday, but they did not. So Kansas City, 10-10, is sitting in second place. Then St. Louis has played 2 more games than anyone else in the division, and they are 10-12, and then Orlando's sitting at 8-10. So Orlando has 2 games in hand on Kansas City and 4 games in hand on St. Louis. So they have the games available to them that if they win them, they can pass all these teams pretty easily. But they have to win them, and they only have like 6 games left. They're going to have to probably win. I think 4 might do it, but 5 would really do it, but that's not going to be easy because they do play, I do believe they play Milwaukee again, and but they do get to play Florida again at home, and they have done pretty well against them. So it just comes down to
say there's a chance.
Yeah, and they got to beat Kansas City. That's a very important head-to-head game coming up. So then they play, I think, play a couple of out of division games. Harrisburg is a very beatable team. They're 7-12. They play. But they do play at Baltimore, and Baltimore is a very good team as well. They're 13-6, so that's going to be difficult as well. So they're going to have to steal one either against Baltimore or Milwaukee, I think. But it's doable, and
it's doable.
It's probably just going to come down to the wear and tear on the star players, and the fact that they had to play so many back-to-backs down the stretch, in the end will probably keep them out, I'm guessing. But a really valiant effort for this team, especially with, they started the season without Victor France. He was hurt. He came back in. He got hurt again. Thiago Freitas has been playing with two bum knees, and it's kept him out at times. And even when he's been on the pitch, he's the poor guy, I think, was in St. Louis or Kansas City a couple of weeks ago. He could barely walk. I mean, he was on the field. He was playing, but he did not look good. And it was sad to see, but anyway, the Seawolves have been they leave it all out on the pitch, and they're fun to go see. So go see them while you still can, because the season's winding down. Yeah, it's a good segue, Dave. I think that's a good segue to talk to our guest tonight. What do you think?
So it looks like we're professional.
No, it's not like that at all. But. Let's get to our special guest. We'll do that right after this. All right, joining us this week on the Mainland Podcast, happy to have with us from the Orlando Seawolves, is Gordy Gerson. Gordy, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Gordy, the inaugural season of the Seawolves is hitting the home stretch here, and I know that you guys need every game at this point. It's a really tight race in the division, and things have been going probably not as well as you'd hope, but pretty good for an expansion team. How's your experience been with the Seawolves this year?
It's been a good experience. I mean, we've had some ups and some downs, as you know every team has had in this league, but We've gotten through it together, and it's nice. And you know, we've been through so much together that at the same time, it's sad to see us not doing so well or as well as we'd like ourselves to be doing.
Now, you've been in the MASL for quite a few years. A veteran. There's obviously some guys who have come from the regular soccer game, and then you've got new guys and veterans like yourself. How's it been trying to get all that together on an expansion team?
Oh, I mean, it's at the beginning, first week it was a little struggle. Guys are doing different styles, and it's changing everybody's game, but little by little we're adapting more and more, and it started to show in our results, and it started to show in trainings, and it's really cool to see, actually, the difference of the game and how the adaption works. But once the guys get it, and the more repetitions they've been in, and the more times they've seen a top of the box set play or a man down power play, those things are really key to the indoor game. So once I think these guys keep getting more reps in these situations, I think we're just going to keep getting better.
Now, the crowds haven't been huge down in Kissimmee. You've had some diehards though down there in the Wolfpack and everything. How has the Central Florida area here? How are they, the fans, embracing the indoor game? Because it's kind of new for those of us here in the Orlando area.
To the people we talk to, I'd say most of them love it. I mean, obviously, it's a different game than outdoor, but to be honest, it's more exciting to watch. There's more goals. It's fast paced. It's hard hitting. It's just a different type of atmosphere. And on top of that, we're meeting the fans after the game at the Heritage Club. We always, sit down and talk and spend time with the people that give back to us, that come and watch us. So I think it's a different kind of vibe than outdoor, but at the end, it's more family friendly, and it's always a good time.
When we talked to Tom at the beginning or prior to the season, he told me I need to come down from Tallahassee. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to make it. His pitch was cheap beer and fast paced play. What would you add to that?
I would say the physicality of the game is completely different. You're constantly one on one with somebody, going up into a battle, up against the boards. It's a lot similar to hockey and basketball. Just fast paced, the ball stays in play most of the game, and there's a lot of goals.
So Gordy, you're you know, in a season like this, you're among the league leaders in goals and points, but I'm sure you would probably give some of that up for more team success. Are you seeing around the league, it seems to me like there's a couple of really, really strong teams like Milwaukee and San Diego, and then everybody else is kind of fighting to be at that next level. Is that kind of what you're seeing, and how does the rest of the league pull up to those teams' level?
I'd say the difference between those teams are the depth of the rosters. I mean, Milwaukee, San Diego, props to them. They have, you know, Ian Bennett gets hurt, but they have guys that step up and take his role, no problem. And, you know, I mean, obviously they're not going to do it like Ian Bennett does, but they have guys that step up. And, you know, we're coming down to crunch time where we're having double headers and injuries are starting to hurt us and guys are playing banged up or guys are missing games. And it's starting to take a toll on us. And with the extra couple games that they've put in the season, you know, and it's the same amount of time that we've always been playing, but on top of that, we're playing extra games now. So it's just, you know, a lot of on our bodies, we're playing a lot of back-to-backs, but guys got to get through it, and we got to find a way to win, and that's why, you know, that's how the big teams do it. So we got to find a way to be that way.
Now, I mentioned Tom a minute ago. What's your assessment of how he's done, obviously this being his first year coaching in MASL? What's your assessment of him?
I have mad respect for Tom. I think he's done a lot of, compared to the day one to now, it's, you know, it's night and day. And he keeps watching the Milwaukees and the San Diegos and the Baltimores, and he keeps coming up to me and he's asking me questions about film that he's seen and stuff like that. And I really respect all the time that he's put in, and he's starting to learn the game more and more every day. You know, sometimes he comes up with a good idea that we end up using, it works for a goal, or he's starting to understand we need more possession, and he's starting to become a true MASL coach.
Now, Gordy, you talked about the injuries and some of the absences. You just had played your 100th game in MASL, and I know that you guys have been you've been playing banged up. You mentioned all the back-to-backs. It's on the one hand, you've got all these games in hand to try to catch up to the teams in front of you. But on the other hand, it's very, very difficult on that second day on back-to-backs, especially when you're playing teams that did a lot of back-to-backs early in the season. They're better rested. No Thiago Freitas for part of this recent stretch. No Victor France for portions of this season. How badly have you guys missed those guys this year? Because you've been in every game just about. I mean, there haven't been many blowouts. You guys have played a lot of close games.
Yeah, honestly, I think, you know, missing a Thiago, every game he's not on the field is always a downfall for us. He's definitely one of the top players in the league. He's unreal with keeping the ball, and he's unreal 1v1. And he understands his role just as much as everybody else does on their team. And we need a guy like Thiago, including a guy like Victor, where, yeah, he's not always putting up all the points, but he's always in the right spots, and he's doing his role, which always helps us with the team. So having those veterans and having those players, you know, missing in back-to-backs and missing some of these crucial games is very crucial for us. So, but I, you know, like I said, I think we just need to understand we're in the crunch time right now. We have six games. We've got to win four or five of them to guarantee ourselves a playoff spot. So we're going to need some guys to step up in big moments, and this is what it's about.
Well, speaking of that and making that final push, what are the key factors? You know, obviously, you know, like say, guys need to step up. But, you know, what in particular does the team need to do to get those results?
You know, we need to possess the ball a little bit more and be a little bit more patient. We need to make sure that we take care of all of our games. Obviously, we've got to take it one game at a time. We have three double headers, so we have six games left, and gotta win the one against Kansas City. That's obviously the most crucial game in the series, and we just gotta make sure we end up with more wins than them at the end of the season.
You know, Gordy, before we let you go, we've been watching Orlando City for years, and that's what we primarily write about, and we've seen, you know, some of our X players come in and play there. Luke Bowden, who had not been playing recently, Lewis Neal and Johnny Mendoza. Tell us a little bit about their progression as indoor players.
Oh, I mean, Johnny is a huge part to our team. I mean, he's on our man down. He's on our six attacker defense, and the guy can just run. I love his motor. He's getting really good to understanding now which spots to be in, when to press, when not to press. And, you know, as they're learning the game more and more, it's so much fun to watch them play because they're incredible outdoor players, as you can tell, obviously. And they come into here and they're just learning a game, and they're now, you know, excelling at the indoor game. And Lewis Neal is one of the best players, I'd say, on the ball in possession in this game. And he's starting to learn, like, his role more on the team. And you know, obviously he doesn't come on the away trips, but when we have him at home, he's huge for us, and it's so nice to have him on the ball.
Well, Gordy Gerson, we appreciate your time. I know you haven't been feeling great. We will be certainly watching you guys, the Seawolves, with another couple of back-to-backs this weekend, 22nd. You guys are in Baltimore on Friday and Harrisburg on Saturday. The next home game that fans can come out and support the Seawolves is the 29th against Kansas City, and then you get a rare day off between games there, and you play at Milwaukee, though, on Sunday afternoon. So, again, not an easy trip. But we wish you the best. We appreciate you coming on the show, and, you know, we know you're closing in on a career high in goals in MASL, so good luck to you.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Hope to see you guys at a game.
All right, thanks again to Gordy Gerson for being with us on the show. We understand he's been under the weather today, so we really appreciate him being on. We had one of the Lions was lined up this week, but his furniture arrived today as we were preparing to record. So he was called away by the wife to help him get the house ready. So we can't argue with that.
I was just going to say about both men, the one that didn't make it, he was a pro because what his wife told him. And Gordy was a pro for coming on, not feeling, on still doing the interview. So, you know, kudos to both.
Absolutely. So, Dave, let's get to some listener mail. There are two ways that people can ask us literally anything here at the Mainland Podcast, and we will give you an answer. Whether it's the right answer or not, you will get one. We will give you an answer, we promise. There's two ways to do it. You can do it on Twitter. We are at The Mainland. And you can hit us up, The Mainland, at The Mainland, with the hashtag AskTMLPC, which TMLPC, of course, is shorthand for The Mainland Podcast. So AskTMLPC hashtag on Twitter, or you can email us, themainland@gmail.com. Ask us anything, we'll answer. Okay, so this week, Dave, I only saw one question.
That's all I saw on Twits.
And it was from a guy who gets... He asks
a friend of, he's definitely a friend of the podcast.
He's a friend of the podcast. Asked us a lot of questions over the past... I don't know how long we've been doing this. Way too long. Ryan Smith is the reader or listener. Maybe he reads us, but he definitely listens to the podcast.
Hopefully both.
Yeah, so we will we will answer Ryan's
let us know
question.
In the comments section of one of the articles.
Yeah, ask us, Ryan. Ask, let us know if you're just a listener or if you're also a reader. He's a Twitter follower, so there's that.
Yes.
Okay. So
anyway, what does Ryan have to say?
Ryan says, hypothetical: Orlando City Stadium finally sells naming rights to become blank Stadium. What is the funniest legit sponsor name you can imagine? And two, what would you actually like to get?
I think they might actually be both. I would love it to be Pub Sub Stadium. And obviously Publix would be the sponsor, but we wouldn't even put on the building. It would be Pub Sub Stadium. I think it flows really well. If you're in Central Florida, or if you're in Florida for that matter, you know what they're talking about. It's funny and it's cool, and we already have a partnership with Publix, and then you can get Pub Subs Stadium. I think it's a win-win-win.
All right. I like the idea of the name Publix Park as a stadium name would be great. I think it
Way more
rolls.
fancy than mine.
It rolls off the Publix Park rolls off the tongue. I mean, it almost doesn't sound like a sponsor because it
No,
sounds
it
like,
doesn't.
because it sounds like, hey, it's a public park. That's the one I would like to see. That's a
And then could
legitimate one I'd
use
like to
Pub
see.
Sub Stadium as the nickname.
I think the funniest legitimate sponsor name would be something goofy sounding like, those blanket things that you put your arms
Like
through, those
Pepfree?
Snuggies. The Snuggies that they sell on TV?
Yeah.
Like
Yeah.
Snuggie Stadium would be funny. That would sound funny to me. I would laugh. I would laugh at that. Of course,
Oh no, what? Flex Seal. Flex Stadium.
Flex Seal.
Yeah, if you're not Flex Seal,
Yeah, I
there's a
know what it is.
whole thing. No, but there's a whole YouTube on it.
Well,
The younger listeners, all one of them know what I'm talking
all
about.
right. Well, all I know is a Snuggie is a funnier word than Flex Seal. So,
Okay.
yeah, it's something like that would be funny. Of course, we could go the basketball route and really, Viagra or something like that. But that would be kind of sad, actually, more than funny.
I think you and I would both like it if, one of the breweries stepped up and did something. I mean, Brew Hub Stadium, or what's one of the other big ones down there?
Well, I mean, there's Orlando Brewing.
Cigar City Stadium. Well, no. I mean, we're gonna have to go for somebody to aiming rights. They're gonna have to have a lot of money. I'm thinking maybe
There,
Cigar City.
they are, but I can always hope that some of these local breweries hit it big. But yeah, it would be kind of cool. But I mean, a lot of people like to talk, Dave, about the stadium naming rights not being sold, and I'm just enjoying it being called Orlando City Stadium before it's called something like SeatGeek Stadium. I
Or
mean,
map free.
MAPFRE. Yeah, MAPFRE.
Map
It's
free, whatever.
I don't like it.
Yeah,
I don't like it.
there's nothing to complain about with Orlando City Stadium.
Yeah. So, I mean, sure, it's less money going into the front office, but at the same time, you get to enjoy a good name rather than something goofy that you have no control over.
What we're saying
So,
is keep it classy.
yeah. So anyway, thank you, Ryan Smith, for being the only one to ask us anything this week. At least I believe you were. I didn't see any others. So if you sent us a
I didn't
question,
see anything either.
if you sent us a question, it got lost somehow because I haven't seen one other than that. So
Or why don't you ask us a question?
yeah, ask us a question. Ask us anything. TheMainland@gmail.com or on Twitter at TheMainland with the hashtag AskTMLPC. All right, Dave. So before we get to the New York Red Bulls game this weekend, let's talk a little bit about the other game going on at Orlando City Stadium, soon to be named Snuggie Stadium or Publix Park or something. This Thursday, the U.S. men's national team is in action against Ecuador, and Sebas Mendez is coming to terrorize the United States. You're not coming down from Tallahassee for this game, are you?
I had originally planned on trying to make it down for this one, and then events conspired against me. So, unfortunately, no, I will not make it down. I'm actually working that day, which is weird because usually that Thursday is my day off.
By the way, I want to apologize. We are having some technical issues tonight with Dave's.
Sure.
Some of Dave's stuff is kind of garbling for me. It's like two words are kind of squishing together when he talks. So, I don't know, Dave, if it'll help you if you speak slower, but maybe.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, hearing isn't the problem. The problem is that Skype is doing weird things to your voice tonight. It wasn't in the first
I
segment.
will speak slower then.
Anyway, Yeah, I'm going to the game as a fan. Our Scott Crumbly has a credential. He'll be covering the game and recapping it and doing the live tweeting thing. So we'll still be able to bring you coverage. I'll still be able to actually go and have some fun, maybe. Although, who knows, because the forwards that got called up are not... they're leaving a lot to be desired, Dave.
Are you saying that you're not looking forward to Giassi Zardes?
Well, I mean, if we play the Giassi drinking game where every time he's a heavy touch you drink, then I won't be able to go home after the game. Unless I Uber, you know, like a $60 Uber.
You're making a big assumption that you would be able to actually work your phone enough to get an Uber after playing that game.
That is an assumption. That is. Yeah. Absolutely.
But, it's a lot of heavy, that's a lot of heavy touches.
Yeah. You know, I'm just, Giassi just doesn't do it for me. Anyway, Paul Arriola has been playing well for DC United.
Yes.
Corey Baird of Real Salt Lake, Jonathan Lewis of New York City FC, and Jordan Morris, who also has been playing quite well for Seattle. Christian Ramirez and Zardes, of course. No Josie Altidore, no Bobby Wood. There is no
Tim Weah.
Yep. And
Josh Sargent.
No Josh Sargent. Those two are probably going to be earmarked for the U23s and be part of the Olympic qualifying. By the way, Olympic
Correct.
Qualifying will take place under former Orlando City head coach Jason Kreis, who was named today as the U23 team manager.
Excellent. Yeah, I saw that. You know what? Good for him.
Good for Jason. Hopefully he'll do well. I mean, I'm certainly not going to root against him. I know there are Kreis haters out there that are probably very upset with the appointment, but he definitely is somebody who's well-versed in the national team setup, and you know, I think that he's qualified to handle the job. Whether it does a good job or not, that remains to be seen. And I do want to apologize to Adrian Heath for jinxing him last week when I said how great the Minnesota has been doing, and then they lose to the Galaxy. Although they've been playing on the road, Dave, and it's not easy to play on the road. And in fact, they were down 2 goals twice. They battled back almost came back to get a point in that game. So they still scored 2 goals on the road. So they are playing pretty decent soccer for the most part. I think they gave up. I want to say they gave up a penalty in that game, which is part of why they were behind. So can't do that.
You can't. And I'm sure she is very grateful for your apology.
Yeah. So sorry, Inchie. I'm going to have some fun here at this U.S. game. Hopefully they'll go out and get a victory. I've only seen them in person once, and they won that game handily. And they scored some goals in front of me, which was nice. Christian Pulisic had a great game, and he will be in the lineup this week. Also, what did you make of the announcement that Berhalter is going to play Yedlin up at the wing and move Tyler Adams back to right back?
I don't know what to make of it, to be honest with you. I mean, Berhalter, you know, he obviously has a vision for what he wants to do with things, and of course, you know, we're still, it's a camp, you know, he may still be trying things out, maybe that's what it is, but just to watch and see, you know, what, how that helps, if it helps at all. So I, you know, you make of it.
I see what he's trying to do, and I think it's interesting, and I've never been huge on Yedlin as a defender per se, so I think it speaks.
Right.
I think it speaks to the fact that he wants to shore up the back because Tyler Adams is a good defensive player. You know, if he plans to use Will Trapp and Michael Bradley in the midfield more, you know, this gives Tyler Adams, you know, somewhere to play. It gets his better
right.
players on the field. So maybe he's just trying to work more of his best players onto the field. Whatever the case,
Yedlin's,
you know,
the one that gets moved around, right?
Right. Whatever the case, a lot of guys play different positions for their national team than they do for their club team. For example, Fabian Johnson famously was more of an advanced player for Borussia Mönchengladbach than he was when he played for the U.S. He was typically a left back. So,
and we all remember the Breck Shea experiments.
Yeah. So I think it's interesting. I can't wait to see how it works or if it works. And, you know, Greg Berhalter is a pretty smart guy. I have a lot of respect for him. So if he wants to try it, I think it's worth trying. And there's no, you know, there's nothing that says he has to stay with it if things aren't working. So that's my take. I know it's a hot one. Try not to get burned.
Oh, you know, right. I think the biggest takeaway for me with camp was, you know, everybody was a little up in arms about Way and Josh Sargent not being there. And like you said, they're going to be most likely allocated to the U23s because they actually have a, you know, it gives them a good chance with the Olympics. It makes perfect sense from a top to bottom, you know, U.S. program point of view, especially when all you're talking about is some friendlies. So go ahead and do it that way. Gives some of the other guys a chance to get in there. And, you know, we're almost certainly going to have Way and Sargent back, you know, a little bit later. So I don't see a problem with it.
The other news out of the U.S. is that Zach Steffen had to withdraw due to injury, so he won't be playing goal. On Thursday night, it will be either Sean Johnson, Ethan Horvath, or probably not the guy they just called up to replace Steffen, Jesse Gonzalez. But you never know. It might be a half for one guy and a half for another guy. So being that it's a friendly, you might get one guy in one game and one in the other, or maybe one guy gets 90 and the other two get 45. It's hard to say what Greg will do on this camp, but they are friendlies, and that's what friendlies are for. So other guys that are involved, John Brooks, Omar Gonzalez, so some veterans on the back line, along with Nick Lima, who did well his last time out when he first got his first two caps. Aaron Long back in the setup. Daniel Lovitz, a guy who just played here the other day with Montreal Impact. Matt Miazga has come over for this. Tim Ream, also from Fulham. And Yedlin, who is going to be pushed forward to a wing. Tyler Adams, we mentioned. Michael Bradley is here. Sebastian Legette, who's been playing better and better since his return from injury. Weston McKennie is here for this. Christian Pulisic, Christian Roldan from Seattle, and Will Trapp. So, you know, it's not
all of bad the, as it could be.
Yeah, it's not all of the top players, but it's also, you know, it's some of the best we have at this point. So,
a truer statement has never been said about the U.S. men's national.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens on Thursday. I'm looking forward to checking it out, and I'm hoping that the team, or I'm hoping that the city turns out for the team. I know it's a weeknight, but I think only 12,000 seats were sold in advance as of day before yesterday, I want to say. It's a 25,000 seat stadium. I know it's a friendly, I know it's a weeknight, but come out and support the team. If you want this team to keep coming back, you've got to come out and support it.
Christian Pulisic, literally in his post Trinidad and Tobago article, pointed to the Orlando match as a high point of teams, you know, run up to that huge disappointment, and it showed why the U.S. should play in our stadium. So it would be a huge disappointment if we weren't able to show up again. And like you said, friendly, not friendly, it doesn't matter. If the U.S. men's or women's national team shows up there, we should pack that thing out.
Yeah, I saw some people complaining about the ticket cost, but I mean, I think my ticket was half of what I paid for the World Cup qualifier. So there are inexpensive seats, too. Yeah, I think it was almost the same seat, too. Well, it was a little closer.
There you go, people.
It's a little closer to the corner, but it was basically the same seat. So anyway, hope to see you out there on Thursday. Dave, let's get to it. We can't put it off any longer. We've tried.
Okay.
New York Red Bulls, Orlando City in Red Bull Arena on Saturday night, 7:30. Who do you got? What's your score prediction? What is your key matchup for this match?
My key matchup is almost identical to last week. It's the defense, the back line. I'm going to leave Brian Rowe out of this because I just gave him a man of the match. But the in the back line against Bradley Wright Phillips. Now, I know that Phillips has not scored a ton of goals yet this season, but he is notorious for being hard against us. So I think that's going to be the key matchup. Unfortunately, if New York was to win, they go to, I believe, 3-1. And that's going to be the score, 3-1.
All right, so they won't have, I know they won't have Aaron Long, but they still have a very formidable team, and they are no longer in the CONCACAF Champions League, so they're not going to have to sit anybody.
Nope. Timing.
I'm going to say, for me, the key matchup, I think it's very, very important for Orlando City to get the first goal. I think that they need to get the first goal for through the first three games. They've gotten some scoring chances, and probably more good scoring chances than we were used to seeing last year. So I'm going to say that for me, the key matchup is going to be Dom Dwyer and whoever's partner is probably Nani, or if it's a three-man front, Nani and Mueller, those guys against Luis Robles. Got to beat him. Got to get one in the net. Got to get the confidence going, and play a good solid road game like they did against Chicago. That to me is the key matchup of the game. That said, my score prediction is going to be 3-1 Red Bulls. Maybe it gets to 3-2 with a late garbage goal, but I don't see Orlando City at New York's level right now. And I think I'm going to say the same thing next week when we talk about DC United. So
No spoilers.
it's a rough part of the season, but I'm not expecting this team, and I predicted it in writing. I don't think this team makes the playoffs. I don't think Orlando City's making the playoffs. I think that it's some steps in the right direction this year, and if ownership is patient enough to stick with this plan, which they have not been in the past, it could be the first steps toward building something gradually. It's just not going to happen overnight. So
Well,
I don't want to rain on anybody's parade. I'm going to be optimistic. I'm going to take a victory if we get one, but I'm not expecting one.
yeah, the one thing we can be assured of, it will now not be a 3-1 because we've both predicted that, and I don't believe that there's ever been a time where we've both predicted the same thing, and that's actually happened.
What did I say last week? 2-2?
Said 2-2, I said 2-1 win, and it was a 3-1 loss.
Yeah. See, it should have been 2-2. It
Yeah,
just wasn't.
you were absolutely way closer than I was, without a
Well, I
doubt.
mean, if I
T
mean,
to be
Dwyer missed
fair,
a knee.
I'm the only one that has a right prediction so far this season.
This
So
season, yes. I think I was right once or twice last year.
you were.
All right, well, that's going to do it, Dave, because we don't have any new iTunes ratings. If you like what you hear, and God help you if you do, give
Hey,
us a
you're not judging. We're
give
not
us
judging.
give us a rating or review on iTunes. By the way, Dave, we're no longer an average 5 rating. We are now an average of 4.5 because we've gotten a 3-star rating and we have gotten a 4-star rating. Within the
We
last couple
won't read
weeks.
it, and we're definitely not going to read those.
No. If you give us a rating of 5 stars and you leave us a review, we will read your review on the air. So that's our promise to you. But feel free to give us whatever rating you think we deserve, and hopefully it's a good one. And anyway, the more ratings and reviews we have, the better it is for us to get in front of more people, and it raises our profile and that we can reach more folks, and that's what we want to do. We want to reach more folks.
Yes, more than the 5 of you that we talked to.
I'm tired, Dave. Let's wrap this up, shall we?
Let's wrap it up. Let's do it. I'm tired too.
All right. So next week we'll be back to talk about Orlando City's game at Red Bull Arena. We'll see if we get some information out of the Pride, out of their friendly on the road against the North Carolina Courage, last year's runaway champions. And also, we'll talk about the U.S. games. And, you know, there's tons of stuff. We're in it now. The season is here. We're
back
in the
weekly.
Thick of it. Yeah, I mean, we've been back to weekly now, but now it's really, we're really in the thick of things. Not only is the MLS team in the midst of the season, the NWSL season, the preseason is underway, and the season will be here before you know it. It's cranking up. The OCB opener is a week from this Saturday, and the Seawolves are playing two games every weekend. So there's tons of stuff going on.
And for the who gave us the 3-star and the 4-star ratings, remember, we're still in, you know, early season form here. Give us a chance. We've got to get back into this. We've been doing it monthly, but we got to get back into our weekly form.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's right. That is
it was true. Worth a try.
Yeah, so, no. And we'll try to fix whatever's going on with Dave's Skype. It was so good in the first segment, and it's not that good in the last segment, but... I plan to have more time on my hands to plan more and to do a better job on the podcast and to get you the guests you deserve, folks, because that's part of my job here. And also, I've finished painting my man cave.
And I will go get a new microphone headset if I have.
I don't think it's your microphone, Dave. I think this is just a bad connection. I think you, for whatever reason... This is, you know, some Skype calls are perfect and some Skype calls are
some
not.
Some are not. Let's blame Skype. That makes me feel better.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to get out of here because every time you talk now, I cringe. Not because of you, but because of the connection. Anyway, that'll do it. Please read our stuff on themainland.com. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and, of course, subscribe to the podcast and leave us that review. And we will read it on the air if it's a 5-star review, or at least give us a rating. And we'll be back next week to do it all over again. You can find Dave at Mainland Dave on Twitter. You can find me at Mainland Michael. And you, of course, can follow the Mainland main account at the Mainland. And that's going to do it. We will see you next week. Signing off, episode 154, the way we always do. By saying, go City, go Pride, go Seawolves, go OCB.